White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 360. Welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment. Is that the Vikings theme I'm hearing? I don't know. What will I choose this week? In association with TheWarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. And by people like you, who we need more than ever right now. Please don't desert us just because you're mad at the team. Please, we need you. The Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family via Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always, reluctantly on both of our part this week, by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, I thought you summed it up pretty well on Twitter this afternoon when you tweeted the picture, the gif of the Auburn guy just lying prone.
I want to be clear, it's actually a UVA fan from years ago, but
okay, it was orange and blue, and it worked for us. But yeah, it was a guy lying forward, just utterly miserable. It was like the classic, you know, I've just given up. My team has destroyed my life. And then there's a lady next to him, and slowly she reaches over and just kind of tentatively pats him on the back. And you said that was our job this week, basically, right?
Said they're there.
Yeah, we're here to say they're there. But I'm not sure how much there is there that we can there, if that makes sense there.
Clear as mud.
Yeah. So I think what we've decided to do for the most part this week is just do a listener question show. And I think, because, correct me if I'm wrong or if you have other ideas on this, but I think that pretty much anything we would talk about for the first 20 or 30 minutes of the show will be a listener question anyway. So we might as well just roll everything together and try to have a group therapy session, right?
Yes, and they came through with lots of questions, so we have things to answer.
I never doubted that they would, and we need some group therapy. Clearly, this season is not turning out to be what we expected. I mean, I've been saying it's turning into 2015, where we won a big neutral site game in the last second on opening week, and then things kind of went down from there. But seeing Liberty defeat Troy this weekend, I'm now worrying we're going to get into a 2012-type scenario where it never gets any better. I mean, if we lose to Ole Miss and Georgia and Alabama, then, you know, at that point, let's see, that would be 4-4. What are we right now? I don't even know. I can't even keep up. It's so 4-3. Yeah. So if we lose to Ole Miss, Georgia and Alabama, who's still left? Texas A&M. Then that's 4-7. Liberty is our only hope left, if those things happen, to get another win. So it's starting to take on that tone. I mean, at least we know we won't go 3-9. That's guaranteed. We won't go 3-9. But anything, I don't think there's any guarantees beyond 4-8. Honestly, right now. And again, I know people are saying we're going to beat Liberty. Well, you know what? They beat Troy. Troy beat LSU. I mean, last year. So I'm not taking anything for granted. So you have any quick thoughts before we get into our listener questions this week?
Yes. Here's my quick thought. We're going to talk a lot about accountability this week.
Okay.
And so here's some accountability for me. I did a poor job last week during the Tennessee preview. You asked me, should we be worried? And I said no. And I'm not just saying this because of the outcome of the game. I mailed that in. And I need you and the listeners to hold me accountable for that, because here's what I should have said, okay? Auburn is playing an 11 a.m. kickoff, you know, a historically bad time
slot for us. You did mention that, to be fair. You did mention that okay. It was 11 o'clock. Yes, you did.
And our team was playing with no confidence and coming off a tough road game loss against a physical team. The team we were playing was coming off a bye week. Okay. The game was scheduled during fall break, so the students were not in school. But I got to give credit, the crowd actually turned out really well in this, despite the 11 a.m. and the students being on break. Tennessee had 2 weeks to prepare and with the bye week to rest up there and heal their injuries. Our one decent running back we knew was still injured and banged up. Our opponent had not won an SEC game in almost 2 years and was desperate and would claw, fight, and do anything to steal a win from us. That we should have seen the desperation. You never want to play the desperate team. Yeah. And their coach was Pruitt, who had had success over the long term against Gus's offenses. So that's what I should have said last week in the preview, and for that, I'm sorry.
Or to sum it up.
It's a trap!
Right?
Fair.
Yeah.
Fair.
Speaking of Admiral Akbar, we got Ole Miss this coming weekend.
It's a trap!
It's more than a trap.
It's a trap!
Yes. I did threaten to just do the soundboard the entire episode tonight. I could just set it on autopilot and gone and watched, you know, my DVDs from 2010 or something.
But, we have some soundboard questions later. I'm going to encourage you to hang around for those.
My point I want to make is, about a week ago, Brandon, friend of the show, Brandon Marcello, our first video guest, he wrote a story where he basically said the locker room was not good, the atmosphere was not good, there was finger pointing, there was dissension, and all that. He took a lot of flack for that. He took a lot of heat for it, but he stood by his reporting, as he should, right? I mean, if he didn't believe it, he shouldn't have reported it. But he said he believed it, and he had it from good sources, and he reported it, and that's his job. I mean, you know, you can hate the message and not take it out on the messenger. So he took a lot of flack for that. Well, I'll just tell you that I have it from sources totally separate from Brandon, as far as I know, that it's even worse than Brandon said. So, you know, I don't know how much detail I could really go into other than to say apparently multiple sources are saying there's real dissension in the locker room, toxic atmosphere, and the coaches are not doing a lot about it. In fact, probably exacerbating it by some of how they do their jobs. It's not all of them, but some of them. Some more than others. And I also have it on good authority that we might very well be losing at least one of our more prominent coaches soon, not from above, but by that coach's own choice because of how things are going and how things are working. And honestly, I, at this point, if this is all true, couldn't blame them one bit. So we know that Gus Malzahn will be our coach for the next couple of years. We know this.
We got lots of questions about this, so don't go too far down that road.
All right. that being the case, if you can't and let's just hypothetically say you can't change that, then the other thing you can do is change the middle management. You know what I'm saying? And so I think that's much more likely to happen. That's sort of the Tubbervillian method of dealing with these things, right? Is you pitch a couple of assistants overboard every other year and kind of keep things bubbling along. And so, all right, well, let me go ahead and open up Parliament.
Thank you. Order, questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
Please clap.
All right. This first section of questions is about Gus. This first question is from Valiant Hermes, who says, Gus has shown at times that he has the ability to coach at a high level, but there's just no consistency from season to season outside of recruiting. Why do you think consistency on the field has been so hard to achieve? Is it coaching, player execution, or something else entirely?
Well, we've talked about this sort of thing over and over, that in terms of consistency of winning specific games, it's always been one or two specific things every year. Right? I mean, I'm not sure how much Gus's coaching could have made the defense better the second half of 2014. But I'm not sure how much Gus's coaching could have made Carl Lawson stop injuring his hip. But on the other hand, you can certainly point to things like the way that 2016 started with the Clemson and Texas A&M debacles as being Gus and Rhett Lashley. I think it's been a combination of things. I think that we've been extremely unlucky. We've had depth in some areas. We've had great players in some areas, but we've been very, very thin at certain critical areas. And if one person got hurt, I mean, you know, Gus couldn't make Sean White more durable in 2015 and 2016.
No, but he is responsible for that. I mean, yeah. Gus, the piece of this, the consistency piece that Gus is responsible for, besides the in-game coaching decisions, game plan development you talked about in those other games, is the allocation of scholarships on offense over the course of seasons. And we came to do this feast famine thing on offense, where we're not recruiting enough quality offensive linemen. Then we kind of wildly go from, you know, no quarterbacks to too many quarterbacks to, you know, no wide receivers, too many wide receivers. And now we're at a place the season is in this position this year because we don't have enough quality offensive linemen and because we've done a poor job with running back recruiting the last couple of years.
Yet we were pulling in 4- and 5-star running backs every year.
Well, but I mean, again, stars are great, but evaluating who's a good 4- or 5-star player, I mean, you know, the guy that should be the upperclassman 4-star is playing backup safety and never seeing the field. So the other one is Cam Martin. So you have to evaluate that and look at the stuff. And so that's the piece, the consistency piece that I think Gus is accountable for is, you know, you can't recruit like for stars. You have to look at your roster and go, you know what? We'd love to have that other 4-star receiver, but we got too many receivers. We need another guard. You know, we need another really good offensive lineman. We need to go get those guys. And I think, look at this roster this year. Go, you know what? We need a grad transfer running back or something who can take some heat off these guys and take some tough carries. So that's the piece that I think creates the consistency issues.
You know, it's not much of an exaggeration to say that right now there's probably almost as many players in the NFL that started out on this Auburn team and just couldn't get on the field or just didn't seem like they were any good and they transferred somewhere else and now they're in the NFL as there are players that actually, you know, graduated from Auburn and went to the NFL. And that's a little disturbing to me.
I don't know if it's at that level, but I mean, it's fair. There's a lot of good players leave. But all right, we got a lot more questions. You ready for the next one? Mm-hmm. This is from Theodore Roosevelt, who said, "This is the first time in the Gus Malzahn era I felt we lost to an inferior team. There is no upside. I've heard that he has lost the locker room, and if that's the case and we lose to Ole Miss, he should be fired and Steele should become the interim head coach. I have absolutely no confidence we can beat any team on our schedule, including Liberty. Yeah. There are no excuses for last week and this season as a whole. If we are to salvage this season, we need a major change."
That's why I have basically given up on this regime. Because you can come back from injuries, you can come back from recruiting problems, you can come back from just about anything. I'm not sure you can get the locker room back when you totally lose the locker room. And I don't know they've totally lost it. I mean, there's certain players out there that'll just never stop, you know, like Deshaun Davis, right? I mean, obviously, you know, he's Mike Singletary basically on this team. But I just, once you lose the majority of the players, and then once you go from there, I have so many people telling me privately, there's no discipline, there's no accountability, there's no strictness. It almost sounds like Chizik last year or two again, which just makes me think about 2012 all over again. And it, you know, when they say that, what is it that people will say, that turned dark suddenly, or that unexpectedly.
That got dark quickly?
Something like that, yeah. That's how this season feels. This season feels like a joke where the punchline disappeared and we just wandered off into not knowing what we're talking about after starting off very promising. So, yeah, but my point is, I feel like once you've lost what we've lost internally, I don't know you ever get that back with the same staff. And I've basically come to grips now that, as I keep saying, 2013 is not walking through that door.
Larry Bird's not walking through that door, fans. Kevin McHale's not walking through that door, and Robert Parrish is not walking through that door.
And Nick Marshall's not walking through that door, and Trey Mason's not walking through that door. And so D Ford is, but that's the other D Ford. She's coming over to the Liberty game, but not the other D Ford. So, yeah, I've basically just sort of reconciled myself that all I've wanted all this time is to get back that feeling from 2013 when we were doing something that nobody could cope with, that could even beat Alabama and just destroy Missouri and Tennessee and get us within a play of the national championship. That's what I've longed for. And I've basically come to grips now. It's not coming back. It's just not. And if you lose the locker room, you're never getting it back. We're not just not getting 2013 back. I'm afraid we're going to not ever get out of 2012 now.
I'm not that far down that road. I'm honestly not. I mean, again, I understand the contract stuff, okay? But the offense was pretty good last year. The team was pretty good last year. We beat Alabama and Georgia and won the West. And so, yes, things have been bad this year. But to me, they are structural things. I mean, honestly, the core of the problems this year to me are structural things caused by bad decisions in recruiting like 2 years ago. And so, you know, if they had recruited a couple more offensive linemen and a running back in there, a different running back, we would be in a different place right now. But they didn't. So to me, the idea that it's all gone and they can never get it back, I don't believe that. And I caution you to think that, because and we'll go into some more Gus questions here, but I am very skeptical that we are getting out from under this contract.
Well, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this. So this season is already worse than 2015. There's nothing. The only thing at this point that can make this season better than 2015 would be beating Georgia or Alabama, right? That's the only way. And it's certainly not going to happen the way things are right now. which means that, because think about it, for all that we hate 2015, for all that we think about how terrible 2015 was, in 2015 we had a winning record and won the only bowl game in the Gus Malzahn era. 2015 is the only year that we won a bowl game under Gus. The only one. And we had a winning record. We're not going to have a winning record this year, and we're not even going to play in a bowl game unless something drastic, lightning strikes tomorrow. So this season is already probably worse than 2015. And you know what that means? That means that 2016 and 2017, with all their problems and issues, now constitute the high watermark for this group, for this coaching staff. Getting blown out by Oklahoma in the Sugar Bowl is now the high bar to reach. You know, I defended that Sugar Bowl and us going to it and even getting to play in it on the grounds that it's the Sugar Bowl. We get to play Oklahoma. That's awesome. And, you know, and then last year winning the SEC West and everything that happened. I defended those. But that's now the high, watermark. That's now like what we aspire to in our best years is to get blown out by Oklahoma or to get or to lose the SEC championship game. So unless you see a 2003-2004 same coaching staff, more or less, same team, completely different results, because it wouldn't next year wouldn't be 2012-2013. It'd be because that's a different staff. This would be Tuberville in 2004 changing like one coordinator and going from, you know, 8-5 to 13-0. And I don't know. I mean, what's Al Borges doing now?
I think he's around somewhere. All right, we got a lot more Gus questions. Let's I'm going to keep coming to these. Next one is from Wardam Wade. He said, you probably already discussed this by now, but if not, I'm interested to hear who you guys would like to replace Gus. John usually has good ideas of who's out there that could be good. Just firing Lindsey now at the end of the year isn't enough. Gus and President Leith should be gone the sooner the better.
Wow.
Well, I mean, Leith is responsible for the contract, so I get it why people are – feel that way.
Yeah. But the contract means we're not getting rid of Gus. Somebody tweeted a list of like four or five coaches they wanted instead of Gus, and I'm like, they'll all have other jobs or won't be available by the time we could hire them. You need to think about who's going to be available in 2 or 3 or 4 years, because that's more realistically.
I'm going to entertain this question because he asked it in good faith, but I do not see a scenario where we get at where Gus Malzahn is not the coach next year. And I'm okay with that because, I just said, like, I still have a flickering hope that we're going to be okay.
You can ask me what color I want my Lamborghini to be, you know? I mean, well, that's a fine hypothetical question. But
I understand it, but people ask, so I'm going to answer.
Sure.
Because this is the other part. You may not like the answer, okay? I mean, this is the other people. There's no, you know, Tom Herman, Scott Frost, Lincoln Riley, Kirby Smart out there right now. Okay. There's not. Your three pools are, coordinators, lower tier coaches, and Power Five coaches. Okay. Among coordinators, your options would be like Dave Aranda, Brent Venables, or Kevin Steele. And I love Kevin Steele. Okay. Kevin Steele was the head coach at Baylor a long time ago. He was 9-33 and won one conference game in 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Lower tier coaches from non-Power Five schools. I mean, the two guys that get mentioned all the time are Neil Brown at Troy, who, as you said, just lost to Liberty. And Scott Satterfield is the coach at Appalachian State, he's going to get a major head college job. I suspect he's going to be the head coach at North Carolina a year from now. But he's going to get a big job. Power Five coaches that are out there that we could get. If you asked me to go, we won the lottery and you said, John, you get to pick whoever the coach is. The one guy I might go get is Jeff Brohm from Purdue, who I would view as like Bobby Petrino's offense without the Bobby Petrino yuckiness. But you don't have the individual Bobby Petrino who's a dirtbag. Jeff Brom's a better human being than that. And he's a really, really good offensive coach. So I think now Louisville's going to fire Petrino and try to hire him at the end of this year. The writing's on the wall already. And I think because he was the quarterback there and went there, I suspect he'll probably go home and be the quarterback at Louisville for the next 10 years and, you know, do a bunch of good stuff. Other than that, like the Iowa State coach, they beat West Virginia. I think he's a good coach and eventually he's going to get a bigger job. I mean, some people suggest James Franklin. I don't think he's leaving Penn State. And I think he just lost to an unranked Michigan State team. So you can throw around whatever you want about that. So that's my answer to the question.
The Washington coach, Peterson,
mm-hmm.
I think it would be funny. I think it's funny that a couple of people have mentioned him, because if by some strange miracle we hired him next year, that would be at least the second. It would not be the first time that we hired a coach to replace a coach who beat him that season. Because we hired Tommy Tuberville at the end of 98, and one of the only games Terry won in 98 was shutting out Tommy Tuberville.
Yeah, we're not getting Gus Peterson. That ship sailed when we hired Gus the first time, this time. He was still at Boise then, and it was a theoretical chance we could have hired him, but that ship's gone. All right, next question is from Dan and at Dan in North NC. He says, disclaimer, I like Gus and want him to stay. He says it seems help is on the way at O-line in this recruiting cycle, but guessing that we may need to keep the coaching staff intact to get them. How many wins does Gus need to stay? Alternatively, how many does he need to win to give hope for next year? So what would a scenario look like for you where there you had hope?
Stop losing to crap teams and play Georgia and Alabama tough. But it all goes back to the offensive line. I mean, all the terrible things we're seeing out of Stidham directly go back to the offensive line. I mean, he's running around like a wounded chicken, flapping around and throwing the ball up for grabs, but he wouldn't be doing that if he didn't have guys in his face on the snap every play. I mean, I'm not saying it's not his fault, but I think that maybe it's just this is the first time in his football career that he's had virtually no protection at all. And so he's never been in a situation where he's had to figure out what to do in that case. And so last year he had time to hand the ball off. He had time to run a trick play. He had time to look around and throw the ball. This year he never has any time, period, and so he's making terrible mistakes. I mean, he did make some mistakes last year. He fumbled a bunch last year, remember? In some critical moments.
He did.
He's just doing all that a lot more this year because he has the opportunities to make a bad play are a lot more often this year. And so I feel like he's suffering from a couple of things. He's suffering from the way that he's not getting any protection at all.
We have lots of Stidham questions to come.
Well, so I'm covering some of it now, and I can refer back to the answer I gave some moments ago. But I lost my train of thought.
You were talking about how he has more opportunities to screw it up.
Yeah, he has more opportunities to mess up, and he has less. He doesn't have all that much experience. I mean, when you really think about it, he hasn't been a starting quarterback all that much. He had a good year last year where he was protected most of the year. He had a handful of games the year before that at Baylor, or 2 years before that at Baylor, and that's it. So this year he's out there running for his life, making dumb mistakes because he's never been in the position to make those mistakes quite as much before. And so, at that, and then he doesn't have a power running back he can lean on. And so the wheels start coming off, and then the defense has to stay on the field for 45 minutes. And so the wheels come off some more. And it just is a death spiral, like we talked about before. So, you know, you say, what would give me hope? If we had some kind of a hope for a better offensive line next year, and we had some kind of a hope for if Stidham just can't get it done anymore, if we've shattered his confidence, then some kind of a dual threat running type quarterback, you know, that would give me some hope. And you realize the offensive line does have the potential to be better next year because this same crowd will mostly be around next year. But in 2 years, this whole crowd even will be gone. So if we're not bringing in five or six really good offensive linemen this year going into next year, 2020 is going to be ugly. You think this year is ugly? Oh, my goodness. Look at the depth chart and the years on those guys and tell me what 2020 is going to look like, especially if Calvin Ashley doesn't pick it up. Now, he might, because this is like the first year he's really been playing. But if Calvin Ashley is a bust, and I don't know that he is, but I'm just saying if, and he hadn't been, he looked terrible against Mississippi State, then we're in deep, 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 deep trouble over the next 2 years.
All right. Next question from John Nall, who says, okay, this is like my third time writing this email because the first two attempts just turned into me venting. Van once related Gus to a mom's boyfriend that always bring home filet mignon but only make hamburger helper for dinner. He said, I think of it more like Gus as a chef with an award-winning recipe, but he always forgets the ingredients at the market. Instead of changing the recipe to better fit the ingredients he does have, he instead just continues to trust the system, I mean the recipe, which leaves us with a somewhat decent product, but one that is clearly lacking.
Please clap.
That's good. That was well said.
It was well said. I really liked it.
Yes.
Our next question is from Jay online. It's at JAU92, who says, based on Auburn's culture, hiring history, fan expectations, and or complaints about Gus, what are the requirements when hiring Auburn's next head coach, whenever that may be? And he says, here are your potential answers, okay? Good Christian man.
Yeah.
Southern.
Probably.
Multiple years as a Division One FBS head coach, preferably Power Five, preferably SEC.
I don't know about that, but maybe. When was the last? Was Tuberville? I mean, Tuberville's the only SEC concurrent head coach I can remember us hiring.
That's right.
That's the only one.
No bad losses. Winning record versus top 10 opponents.
Oh, well.
Won championships.
So you're basically wanting to hire Nick Saban.
Or can beat Saban every year.
Oh, you're wanting to hire Hugh Freeze.
No, that is not ever, ever in a million years going to happen.
Well, that's who you're describing. You're describing.
Let's see. One conference championship? No.
Okay.
Good
not
Christian
that.
Man? No.
Well, yeah.
No bad losses? No.
Okay.
There's a bunch of these criteria. He does it. Winning record versus top 10 opponents? No.
Okay. That's true. That's fair.
He had, you know, a good, when they were cheating, he had a very good record against Alabama for 2 years. And Alabama is now going to score 60 points against them for the 10 years.
That should be the title of the Ole Miss documentary about the years they beat Alabama. It should be called When We Were Cheating. That's the 30 for 30 right there. When We Were Cheating, Ole Miss's glory years.
All right, next question is from Joel Beckham, who says, John and Van, I'm officially living in bizarro world where Auburn football fans are enthusiastically looking forward to basketball season while Kentucky fans are savoring their powerhouse of a football team with a solid running game and a staunch defense. What the hell is going on?
What the hell is the world coming to?
Hold on. I got to back up for a second. Oh, crap. I did it again. The previous question, we were...
Yep. About the criteria?
Yeah, but... This is weighing down on my brain too much. My brain's not working tonight. But you're making a really important point there, and I was about freeze. Oh man, it's gone. I had something so good.
It'll come back to you.
Oh crap! All right,
He's, we're continuing with Jewel Beckham's question. He says, Coach Gustav has nothing to lose the rest of the season. Take the reins off the team. Throw every damn trick play you have at the opposing defense. Rotate quarterbacks every play. Start playing loose and just let the players have fun. Because right now, no one is having any fun. Not the players, not the fans, not the coaches. Yeah. And he says, P.S. I'm starting May the Schwartz Be With You campaign to get that iconic Spaceballs line added to Van's soundboard. And he says, I'm very sorry, John.
All right, I'm making a note right here. And I remember. You were right. Ed Schwartz to soundboard. Here's what I was going to say. You were making that point. We were talking about when we were cheating, the Ole Miss story. I'll just go ahead and say right now, and judge me if you must, listeners. Judge me if you must. If I were an Ole Miss fan, and there but the grace of God go I, but if I were an Ole Miss fan, I would take it. I would take whatever they're going through now and in the future to have those 2 years and those two wins over Alabama and over Saban. It was, in my opinion, if I were them, it would be worth it.
Let's remember that.
The whole Hugh Freeze thing, everything, I would be like, if you came to me like a genie and said, you can have two big wins over Alabama and Saban in a row, and all you got to do is, and he'd lay out what's happened to Ole Miss and Hugh Freeze, I'd be like, sign me up. Sign me up. It's that or 6-6 every year mediocrity? Heck yeah, sign me up.
Let's remember that in 2016, I believe it was, the only reason Alabama played in the SEC title game is because stupid Burt Bielema at Arkansas converted a 4th-and-31 against Arkansas, I think in overtime, to win that game.
Oh, my God!
Yep.
I want to point out, before we keep going, this was a Georgia fan from this weekend, okay? A Georgia fan online. Yesterday proved that Kirby is a mediocre coach at best and 100% a liar. This may turn out worse than Gus. So.
The Vulgars are full of sound and fury. But
that worked out better than I thought it would. Okay, the Georgia fans are now the Vulgars.
All right. That was so good. Our next question is from Jonathan Harris, who says, are we really going to have to endure this for 2 more years? It's like a train wrecking into a 40-car pileup. Are we at rock bottom yet? I hope so.
No.
Dispel once and for all with this fiction.
We are not at rock bottom yet. We are not. Ask me the week after we play Liberty if we're at rock bottom yet.
All right. Question from Josh Corbett. He says, what are the chances Auburn goes 6-6 and makes a bowl? God. And what are the chances the crazy buyout is met and Gus is not here next year?
The only chance we have to go 6-6 and make a goal and make a bowl is beating Ole Miss on Saturday. And I guess we'll talk about that in a minute.
What percentage chance would you say that Gus is not here next year?
5%.
Yeah, I'm in that ballpark.
There's going to be whole lot of Yellowwood sold between now and December. Whole lot of Yellowwood. They got to build the freaking wall on the Mexican border using Yellowwood, and then maybe we'll talk.
All right, this is
Gus will be sitting there with his $42 million buyout or whatever it is. Buying every little fancy sports car he sees and just kicking back and counting his money and lighting his cigars with $100 bills and going, hey, that was special.
All right, this question's from Scott Crankton, who says, at what point can Malzahn be charged with child abuse for marching Anders Carlson out there for a 50-plus yard field goal?
That's exactly right. Oh, my gosh.
I'd have looked this up. Carlson is 1 for 8 from over 50 yards.
I have a question, John. I have a serious question. Does Gus just look at the jersey name and think that's still Daniel? Does Gus sitting here going, no, he's hit those for like 7 years. So I know if I just keep giving him another chance, he'll get back to his form of the last few years. We give him a little more rope, and he'll get back to that form he's had, the last couple of years. I mean, I'm honestly thinking that's what Gus thinks. Gus thinks he's a different kicker.
Gus is obsessed with watching him kick in practice when he can kick from 70 yards or whatever. But in a game situation, he is fine out to 49 yards, and over that is a mistake. And it's also like it's a percentage thing. When it's fourth and three, and you're trying a 54-yard field goal, the chances he's going to make it are about 5 to 10% based on what we've seen. The chances of making 3 yards are higher than that.
Yep.
Even with this offense. So you have to stop kicking and go for it. It's just the math of this eludes them, and it really is bothering me. This piece about the math really bothers me.
Yes.
All right. Next question.
Call defense.
We're moving into some different questions now. This is from Anthony Irvin. What is the floor and ceiling for this team right now? And do we need a new OC at the end of the year? And he says, let's face it, Gus is not leaving this year.
I agree with all that. The floor is 4-8. The ceiling is 6-6 and a bowl game. And yes, we need a new offensive coordinator because Chip is not going to be our offensive coordinator next year under virtually any circumstances. And so you've got to find somebody that's willing to pretend to be the offensive coordinator while Gus runs the offense and gets the blame. That's the job of the offensive coordinator right now, is to pretend to be the person calling the plays and take the blame when it doesn't work, when Gus's offense doesn't work. That's your job. So, they want to hire me, I'll come down and spend a year doing that. Why not? I mean, it'd be cool to be Auburn's offensive coordinator. I wouldn't have to do anything. Wouldn't have to actually work. I mean, I'm not saying that Chip – I mean, I think it would be great if Chip ran the offense. I'd love to see Chip's offense. We haven't. Be cool to see it sometime.
I think we saw Chip's offense in the Alabama game last year.
Yeah.
And I think the reason for that and the reason it worked is because we hadn't run it the rest of the year. And Alabama exactly. And Alabama was prepared for Gus's offense. Absolutely. And they threw all the Gus's offense stuff out and said, run your other stuff and don't base it on Gus's stuff.
Yeah. And so Gus said, well, that worked. Throw that out.
Yeah.
Let's go back to
We are incredibly predictable on offense by personnel. When we have the tight end, the fullback in there, we run like 85% of the time. And when they're not in there, we pass like 85% of the time. When Malik Miller's in there, we pass like 85% of the time. We're very predictable. And there was some amazing stats that came out tonight that
SEC Gus has been setting that play up for since 09. It sure is going to catch him by surprise when he finally runs it. Some stats came out about what?
From Jordan Rogers, the guy. He's basically said Auburn has 6 completions this year inside the hash marks. From 8 to 44 yards past the line of scrimmages, So basically, we do not throw the ball in the middle of the field ever. No. Ever. And a couple of those were to Seth Williams this week. All right, next question is from Auburn Elvis.
Do it.
Auburn Elvis trying to lighten it up a little bit says, is this year Auburn gets back to the Belk Bowl? I got to say, I'm looking forward to some Twitter exchanges between Drunk Aubrey and the official Belk Bowl Twitter account.
We can only dream.
SB Nation has us currently predicted to play UVA in the Belk Bowl, which would be fun. But
we could only dream of playing in something as prestigious as the Belk Bowl this year.
I want to go back to the previous question with the floor and the ceiling. I think the ceiling for this team is 7-5 and not 6-6.
Who are we beating? Ole Miss, Liberty, and A&M?
Yep. I think that's the ceiling.
I think A&M is going to beat us by 20 points.
All right. So our next question is from Steven at Steven AUNI, who says, who's going to be the sacrificial lamb, Stidham, Lindsey, or Grimes? Also, Hand's offensive line is doing well in Texas. Apparently, it wasn't very good until he inherited it.
Wow. Yeah, I hadn't noticed that, but
I watched them beat Oklahoma, and they ran the ball over him. So
interesting.
We like to throw Hand under the bus. Yeah. There's a lot of that in the preseason.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah. They were bad at pass protection at times under him, but it was not this bad.
No. I've said that Chip Lindsey will not be our offensive coordinator next year. That's period, 100%. So they'll say it was him, even though we all know, and they'll bring somebody else in. Stidham, I really have no idea what becomes of him. He's not going to the NFL after this. Will he come back here? Will he transfer? I mean, maybe he should. I mean, I don't think he's a bad quarterback at all. I think he could be potentially a very good quarterback. I don't know if he could be here, though.
I think he could end up getting drafted despite all of this, because the NFL sometimes looks at the physical stuff and goes, we're not blaming you for the offensive line stuff and other things. Our next question is from Logan Chilton. Mm-hmm. And before I read his question, he did tweet us today to say, I hope you guys know that doing this is what helps keep us from jumping through windows. I don't know if it helps your mental stability.
No, it's not quite 2012 yet. It's not like having to go to the dentist every Monday night. I enjoy talking to you, and I enjoy the fact that maybe we make things a little less unbearable for the audience. But yeah, it's not great for my mental health to have to spend Saturday miserable and then spend Monday dreading rehashing the misery. So, but it does let us work it out a little bit, you know, kind of work through it. So,
yeah. All right. Logan Chilton says that, before the season, we looked for weaknesses in the team to figure out how the season might go. We knew there was some replacing some talent on the O-line and figured there may be a little growing pain. But this isn't growing pain. Where's the development? It's not like there isn't talent. Mm-hmm. He says, the line gets no push on the rare occasion there's any semblance of pass protection. Stidham seems so surprised he doesn't know what to do. Was this Hand not developing the guys who were there, or Grimes just being past his prime? And he says, to borrow a quote from Harry Potter, can we panic now?
Yeah, I'm panicking. I'm full blown panicking. I'm absolutely. Yes.
Okay.
Are you not panicking? Are you? You still feel like we can somehow salvage something decent out of all this?
Not this year. I mean, I think that, again, games ago, I said the offensive line was like a limitation, a limiting factor on what this team could achieve this year. Yeah. And we've seen how true that is. So, again, I think the best case scenario for this team is like 7-5. And if they were 7-5, competitive with Georgia and Alabama, I think I would be delighted.
I'm just mad at myself that I bought in once again to the idea that we could be good in years we're supposed to be good. I just can't believe. You know, you always say it's like Lucy with the football. And I can't believe that I ran up and took a swing at that football again. I just, you know, I'm just lying on the ground with the stars going around over my head, and I'm going, I just can't believe I did it. I can't believe I did it. I wish I could go back and redo the barbecue show, and you'd be like, oh, you know, yeah, 11-1. I'd be like, John, 6-6. And you'd be like, no, no way. You'd be like, no, there's no way. That's no. And I'd be like, 6-6, John. And you'd be like, why? Why would you say 6-6 when you know we've got all this talent and everything and blah, 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 blah? And I'd say, because we're supposed to do well. That's it. Because we have expectations. And you know, the thing that makes me the maddest is this is what I have preached to you for as long as we've been friends, right? For decades now. How many times have I always been the one in our friendship? Well, you will get excited about a team. It was kind of the exact opposite of everything else we do, right? Where I'm usually the one that gets excited and you're the level-headed one. That's what it's always been and will always be, is I get excited about stuff and then you're like, no, no, calm down. And that works great, right? We understand our roles. But there's that one way that I've always had where you will get excited about a team and I'll be like, nope, nope, not until they prove it. And I'm always right. And I, dang, but I fell for it this time. So I really wish I could go back in time and say, John, nope, not until they show us otherwise. I will never again predict a big season for Auburn when everybody else is doing the same thing unless they show it to me first. I live close enough to Missouri now. You got to show me, because I'm not going to believe it anymore. I won't get fooled again. To quote President Bush, fool me once, shame on fool, won't get fooled again. There you go.
We need the who.
Blame yourself.
Do you think you're flat on your back looking at the sky, or do you think you're still sailing through the air?
I'm still sailing through the air upside down. I'm still sailing.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's...
All right.
This is a season, question. John, this is a season that the new sound I put on the soundboard is...
Hey, we got to get better at celebrating.
Well, that ain't getting used again. I might as well go ahead and delete that one, save some room, save some memory. Wow.
You could put the Schwartz one in there.
Yeah, that gets that all spot.
Right. we got some questions about Mr. Stidham now.
Oh, goody.
First question's from Joey Miller, who says, hi, Van and John. Thank you for all you do. Your podcast is one of my favorites, even in losses. Your analysis shed light on the whys without losing your mind, unlike some others. And he says, from my view, Stidham has the yips. He's the little girl with the curl. When he's good, he's very, very good. And when he is bad, he is horrid.
Yeah.
Is there a way for him to regain his confidence?
I don't have facts to back this up.
But I tend to agree.
I think Stidham can regain his confidence. I think he's been very careful all season before last week about not throwing the ball anywhere when it could have been a potential interception. We have receivers who are in position that he could have thrown kind of a jump ball at times to different receivers, and he never did it.
Well, he broke that tendency this week, didn't he?
He did, because I think he felt like, oh, the offense is struggling, the team's struggling, I got to make something happen. You know, I got to make a play. Yeah. And those two interceptions he threw were just
terrible,
boneheaded, stupid plays that would be stupid if a peewee football team threw those passes.
Yep.
He says in his part, the second part of his question is, will Malzahn let Malik Willis play meaningful snaps?
That's the $1,000 question right there. It's the two sides of the coin. One side of the coin is, yeah, let's try, you know, Malik, let's get him out there. But the other side of the coin is you're going to be benching your all SEC stud. And I mean, Steve Spurrier would. I mean,
he's not playing.
That's what they're thinking. But I'm just saying, this is where I kind of want Steve Spurrier to be our coach. because we talked about this last week. He's basically Terry Dean now. And I don't think Malik Willis is Danny Werfel by any means, but he's not any worse than Terry Dean right now. And the offense he would be running would be totally different.
We got a couple more questions in this direction. The next is from Rusty at is basically at Rusty on Twitter, who says, "What would it take for Gus to ever look at making a change at quarterback? I'm not saying it would even improve the offense. I just want someone taking snaps that has repeatable success, not just one drive."
Again, that's the $1,000 question. I wish I knew. What would Malik Willis do against Ole Miss's defense?
I think we'd move the ball up and down the field. If Whitlow is healthy and playing running back, yes. I think with the two of them back there, we would move the ball up and down the field against Ole Miss.
And then Schwartz coming around on the sweep.
Yeah.
Works for me. How about that touchdown he had?
Again, that was him. That wasn't – Stidham made an easy throw. Schwartz, there was a moment where he kind of did a little stutter step at the beginning, kind of hesitated to get the defender off balance, and then he ran away from those two guys. It was awesome.
It was amazing.
Oh, my gosh, it was amazing. Here's a question from John Ringer, who says, he said, if a running back or a wide receiver for Auburn ever turned the ball over three times in one game, would this coaching staff ever let that player on the field again?
Wow. No, I think that's right. That's true.
I mean, and I talked at the beginning about accountability, and you talked about problems with inside the team about accountability. This is accountability. Like, if you screw – I mean, if a running back fumbles, they know they're gone, okay? Like, they are not going to get the ball again. And, you know, Stidham makes these boneheaded mistakes and gets to continue to go out there, right? So I think that's the piece about the Malik Willis thing that I'm fine. If Stidham goes out there and makes a play like that again against Ole Miss, I think you pull him for a couple of series and play Malik Willis to see what happens. I think that's the message to me.
Yeah.
All right. We got some other good questions here. About different parts of the ball. Jacob Fleming says, good morning, fellas. Why has Auburn's defense been so bad at stopping opponents on third down? Lack of a pass rush, inadequate defensive back play. Thanks for all you do in War Eagle.
Well, wasn't that the problem in 2014 too? We were pretty darn good on first and second down, and we were just horrendous on third down every time.
Yes,
and it's back. It just seems like we can't cover receivers well without interfering with them or out getting called for it. The games that we've won are the ones where they don't get called for it.
That's very true.
But I saw some offensive pass interference that wasn't called too, and I see that every week.
I think, you know, the macro level stats about how many pressures we're getting in the quarterback and tackles for loss and that kind of stuff are actually the same or better than they were the last 2 years. But we see it at a real level on third down and long. We miss the really good pass rusher. There's not one guy that the other team is scared of. There's not a Jeff Holland or Carl Lawson coming off the edge, and who we can count on to make a play on third long and get in the quarterback's face. We're not getting nearly enough consistent pressure. And that's putting our defensive backs out there, and they're getting burned.
Well, John,
the second,
what are other offenses doing to us on third down that we are not doing to their defenses on third down?
Well, they give their quarterback time. I mean,
they call a play that takes 2 split seconds. We call the trick play that takes 10 seconds to develop, and they end up chasing Stidham all the way back to his own goal line, or we call something where he gets sacked. They throw the ball on a quick slant to the inside of the field.
That's fair, and we've called that a couple times last week, and it worked both times, and we had to call it a lot more.
Exactly.
But I think even when we call a good play, sometimes Stidham's running for his life the minute he gets the ball snapped.
Yeah, it's got to be instant. Yes, it's got to be immediate.
Here's another question that came in. Is Ed Orgeron just pulling a last year's Gus Malzahn, or is he legit? Who would you rather have as coach now?
I wouldn't want Orgeron as my coach in any circumstances whatsoever, ever, ever, ever. That being said, I will freely admit that they have shocked me this year with how well they've played. If they hadn't lost, was it at Florida? Yeah. They'd be undefeated right now. Think about that. They'd be coming up on a big showdown with Alabama, and they'd be undefeated and tied for first place in the West.
And they're really good.
And they could still win the West if they beat Alabama.
Yes. And I think they're going to give Alabama a game in Baton Rouge.
Mm-hmm. Is it in Baton Rouge?
It's in Baton Rouge. At night.
Ooh. Ooh.
CBS is going to do the doubleheader that day, and they're going to be the night game. So.
Well, of course they are. Wow. All right.
All right.
I might have to watch that game.
There you go. Our next question is from Neil Payne, who says, I graduated in 87, have been an AU season ticket holder ever since. There may have been worse AU Auburn teams, but I don't recall one that did less with as much talent as we have now.
Yeah.
I know the offensive line and the tailbacks are down, and that's recruiting, which is on the coaches. But right now I'd rather watch Netflix than Auburn. How exactly did we get here? Somebody else pointed this out. Based on this question, I want to follow up on this. How would you compare the current group of tailbacks to the late 90s Auburn tailbacks? The Rusty Williams, Clifton Robinson?
No. We're not that off.
Oh, yeah, we are.
No, we've got a bunch of freshmen
100%.
That are... 100%. No, we've got a bunch of freshman running backs that are going to be really, really good, but they're just very, very young. And then we've got basically Corey Grant as our, but smaller. We have a cross between Corey Grant and Ontario McCaleb with less speed as our feature back. And so basically we have a redshirt freshman that's our big power back when he's a redshirt freshman and not a junior or a senior. And we've got a Lionel James type who's a true freshman. In that style, you know. I'm just saying he's a true freshman, so he doesn't have any accomplishments yet, but in that style. So what I'm saying is we have a lot more talent on the shelf than we did in 98, 99 at running back. A lot more. We just don't have any of it being what we need it to be right now because we need Rudy Johnson and we have, you know, Corey Grant times five.
We wish we had Corey Grant.
Yeah, well, you know what I mean. Freshman Corey Grant.
Here's another question from John Ringer.
Mm-hmm. Active fellow.
At the dinner at Coach Malzahn's house, did Asa Martin kick his dog or something? Like, what exactly did he do that he did not get on the field last week when Whitlow was in the locker room?
Is he being redshirted or will he still can play?
We're not redshirting him. Like, he was like the best high school running back in the state of Alabama last year. He is a good running back with the ball in his hand. He's a much better running back than Malik Miller is, for example, a much better running back. And we are not even giving him the chance. I get it. He didn't know pass protection, blah, blah, blah. We need to be giving him 10 carries a game right now. I mean, the only people that should be touching the ball, as far as I'm concerned, are Whitlow and Asa Martin.
Yeah.
Our next question is from
and Schwartz.
Keith. And yeah, Shivers is fine. A couple of carries, you know,
Schwartz. I'm saying on the sweep or the quick pass or screen or something. Yeah, I mean he's a weapon. He's a weapon. You got to have him in there.
Well, let's go back to a question I asked you at times before. Okay, you know, who are the four or five guys you're building the whole offense around now today?
Whitlow and Schwartz, and you got to still say Ryan Davis, right? Don't you?
Yes. Ryan Davis and Seth Williams. That's your guys.
Yeah.
Those are the guys I want touching the ball 90% of the time.
Yes.
And the rest of the carries sprinkled out to everybody else. We don't need to be throwing Kinnella the ball anymore. No. You know, we don't need to be throwing I love Slayton. He's having a terrible year. That drop touchdown at the end, as terrible as that game was, if Slayton catches that pass, we win that stupid football game.
Which game?
Okay. The Tennessee game.
Oh, okay.
I mean, he dropped the touchdown pass. As terrible as Stidham had played, as terrible as we had played, with like 6 minutes left, he was wide open and Stidham hit in the hands and he dropped the touchdown pass.
God, so, how many wide open touchdowns have we blown this whole season, though?
A lot.
Yes.
A lot. And so, again, if you can shoot the offensive coaches, they're the ones who created the situation where people were wide open.
There's just no way that Tennessee team comes into Jordan-Hare and should ever score 30 points.
Nope. That's very true.
It should have been 24-6.
Well, but
Even with the turnovers.
I know. That's what I'm saying. 14 of those points were Jared Stidham. Like, yeah. Gift wrapped on a bow handed to them.
Yeah.
So.
Ugh.
All right. Last question is from Keith Splawn, who says he went and did some analysis looking at Bill Conley's advanced statistics about, and again, like I pointed out about the LSU game, how we had like an 82% chance to win. Based on the stats in the Tennessee game, we had a 71% chance to post-game winning percentage, which means if we play that game 100 times, we win it 71 times, basically. Mm. So one of the things he points out, and I'm not going to walk you through all the numbers, but the bottom line of what he points out is basically that we have been – the thing that has killed us is the turnovers. More than anything else, more than not running the ball, more than – the red zone stuff or kicking stupid 50-yard field goals. It's the turnovers that have killed us. And what it boils down to is the math. The difference is about 25 points over the course of the season. And our three losses have been by 22 points or whatever, or 21 points. So he says he doesn't think that's a coincidence. So that the turnovers and how we're dealing with the turnovers and the turnover luck, but also the expected turnovers versus the real turnovers, that's kind of where he's going with it. If you win the turnover battle, you win the game like 73% of the time, and we're continuing to fail to do that. But I thought it's really good. I mean, I like Bill Connolly's stuff, and Keith did a good job writing up this email, but that was the bottom line of his email, is that the turnover stats are killing us.
I think it's as much as anything. Absolutely. I don't think it's the only thing, but I think it's a big part of it. So that was the last one.
It was.
Wow. That was quite a parade of listener questions. And you were right. We did have quite a bit. I got to pause and thank our patrons real fast, because you guys, make all this possible. And you out there too can join the ranks of the AU Wishbone family by going to www.auwishbone.com, or just go to Patreon and put us in there, put in Van Plexco or White Rocket, and sign up for as little as $1 a month to help keep us on the air and keep the therapy coming, because we need it this season. We need it for ourselves and for you, I'm sure. Keep that therapy coming. I want to thank, of course, we continue to thank Brendan O'Dwyer for his great support. And then Christopher Burleson, Joseph Fine, and Brandon Sisson. Phil Amthor, always hanging in there for us. And then Susan Trawick, Ben Spooner, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Justin Bean, Steve Trawick, Richard Stevens. Valiant Hermes, Jacob and Robin Fleming are awesome. Clay Henson, Auburn Tiger Talk, Ann Kangian. Catherine England, George Gaston, Will Summerford, John McCune, Tom Anderson, David Evers, Andrew Barber, Timothy, Steve Harlan, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Rich Reimer, Jared Albrick, William Glenn Matthews, and Joel Beckham. and David Hegler, Mickey B., Hugh Anderson, Shane Bailey, Matt Robbenheimer, Mick Vigicana, Chris Thrash, Logan Chilton, Tony Perry, Alex Nguyen, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, C.T. Wayne, Michael Kirshner, Dave Powell, and for our last batch, I forgot to do my little, Ronald McCollum, Chris Camo, Darren Pyle, Chris, Wardam Wade, Jason Albrick, Randall Walker, Ben Amos, Joshua Corbett, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, Rob Morgan, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Raines, Nicholas Craig, Russell Milling, Matthew Wagstaff, Joey Miller, Mark Squire, Dave Medina, Spanky, Brant Rumble, J.W. Rice, Michael Morton, Lawrence Kane, plus our other one-time donors, including Surfer Chickify and other great anonymous donors. And I can't find the button I need to push there. Okay. All right. So we appreciate you guys. Again, go to www.auwishbone.com. There's a big button there that says Become a Patron. It'll lead you to where you can find out about it. You don't just like automatically sign up. You click through there and it'll give you more information and what you get and all that. In fact, John, I got back from Archon this Sunday night and had a box of books left over this year. And I have been offering them to our patrons. And so if you haven't seen that message yet, if you are one of our patrons, you can request free books. So just send me a message, send me an email if you're one of our patrons. Or if you want to go ahead and sign up now and then send me a message, that'd be awesome too. And you get free books. All I ask is like $3 for postage, and you can get a copy. The list of them is on the Patreon site. All right, let's see. What do we have left that we want to do before we call this thing done?
Do you really want me to talk about the Ole Miss game or not really?
Oh, just give us a quick look at what we should expect in that defeat.
Optimism pouring through the microphone, ladies and gentlemen.
That is our...
My cold, dead hands.
I've never, ever, ever in the history of this show never made us losing a game my lock of the week. So maybe I can, by doing that, maybe I can break us out, you know? I'll do it as like take the medicine and it breaks you out of it and it turns everything around. That's what I hope.
You know Ole Miss. I mean, Jordan Thomas is the quarterback. Here's the danger for Auburn. They're really good. They have really, really good receivers. One of their receivers, DJ Metcalf, it was learned today, got injured in the Arkansas game, is out for the year. They still have two other excellent receivers. They're big. They're physical. They're great at that kind of sideline push off, catch the ball, back shoulder throw we saw against Ole Miss. Mm-hmm. I mean, we saw against Tennessee. And Tomu's an excellent runner, too, which, gee, we haven't had problems with that recently. He ran for 150 yards against Arkansas while throwing for like 300. So we're going to have our hands full stopping them. I don't think we can. So the question is, I think we can slow them down occasionally. The question is, can we score points against them? Their defense is awful. Awful. The worst in the SEC by a long shot. So this is the week to get something going on offense because we're going to have to score 30 points to win this game.
Yeah.
So this is the week to get things going on offense. Whatever you can do to jumpstart the offense, and we may even be like fake a punt or onside kick kind of territory to steal a possession from here. And it would really help if we could run the ball and keep their offense off the field some. So
we'll see.
Trip around the SEC.
Florida looks pretty darn good, even though they gave up 27 to Vanderbilt.
And that game was fun. First of all, Vanderbilt was beating them like 13-0 or something at the beginning of the game. And Florida came back at one. There was a moment in that game when there was a punt return and a Florida guy, decked a Vanderbilt guy and was called for targeting, and the Vanderbilt guy was injured, and it was near the Florida sideline, and the Vanderbilt coach came over and was looking at his injured player and talking to the medics, whatever, and all of a sudden he got into it with Dan Mullen and with their defensive coordinator, what's his name, the idiot who was at Louisville and Grantham.
Yeah. Grantham, yeah.
And Grantham was literally like, go back to your sideline. And he's like, hey, shut up. And Grantham's like, F you. And Dan Mullen literally was going to go on the field and fight him. And the entire Vanderbilt team can run it on the field, like almost to the Florida sideline. There was almost a complete bench clearing brawl in that moment.
Holy cow. You don't think of Vanderbilt when you think of giant bench clearing brawls.
No, but it was there. So that's Florida amazing. Won. Florida is not bad, and I think they're, you know, Kentucky beat them, but Florida is clearly better than they have been the last couple of years. And again, yes. It's going to give Georgia a tough time in their game.
Florida is quiet good, and they're going to sneak into a decent bowl this year. Mm-hmm. LSU beat the snot out of Georgia. Why do I take such great joy in that? I don't know, but it just makes me happy.
No. Schadenfreude, man. I love it. May not be having a good time, but I want Georgia to suffer.
Oh, absolutely. Suffer.
The East has been terrible. They haven't played a tough road game other than Auburn last year in the last two seasons.
Yeah.
And they went to Baton Rouge against a good LSU team and got their rear end hands to them. This is not the same Georgia team as last year. They don't have the same experience. They have a lot of talent, but a lot of their guys are younger. And LSU beat them on both lines. So
wow, I see South Carolina lost yet another close one. They're just almost there, but they just can't quite get it done.
Texas A&M was just better. South Carolina kind of muddied it up for a while and kept it close. But
yeah, Alabama rang up Missouri 39-2. That's way lower than I thought it would be. Are they just like keeping their powder dry or something?
Yeah, the quarterback got banged up and they took him out, and then they kind of just sat on it in the second half.
And how – I didn't see any of these because I was at Archon. How did Ole Miss only score 37 points on Arkansas? I think we scored 37 points on special teams against Arkansas.
Oh, no. It was like 30-17 or something. Arkansas was winning late in the second half. And Ole Miss came back and won this game. The Arkansas quarterback got hurt, and then they were playing that really big quarterback. And Ole Miss came back and won this game. It was a huge comeback win for them. I didn't think in the beginning of the game, Arkansas was rolling up and down the field on them, just absolutely doing whatever they wanted.
Which is what you'd expect to happen against their defense, but still, yeah.
But it was a bizarre, and it was pouring rain, so I, you know, like a monsoon, and it was in the Little Rock, so it was a weird game all around.
All right, so I see that this coming week, Tennessee comes crashing back to earth, and reality smacks him in the face, and Fulmer's smug self goes back in his hole where he's been for the last 15 years, because they got to play Alabama. And honestly, I would normally cheer for Tennessee in this game, but I'm not going to cheer for Alabama, but I am going to laugh if Tennessee gets their brains kicked in. And maybe they won't. I mean, maybe they won't. That's fine. But when Alabama inevitably beats the snot out of Tennessee again, I am going to laugh a little bit, I'll be honest with you. Do you have any thoughts on that one?
I think Tennessee's not a pushover, but I don't think they're significantly better than, for example, than Missouri, who lost 39-10 last week. So.
Memphis at Missouri, nobody cares. Mississippi State LSU, that could be interesting. I don't think this Mississippi State team can hang with LSU. Certainly not.
It's the did LSU spend all week partying and reading their press clippings, and
which is entirely possible for LSU.
Mm-hmm.
They got this
game, and then a couple weeks they got Alabama coming and stuff. So this is a dangerous spot for LSU.
Well, this LSU team, I'm not saying that there, you know, could be anything shady going on or anything. I'm far be it from me to make any kind of a hint that this LSU team could have anything funny going on, but I do agree with you that they could have been partying a little bit too much this week. Tulsa at Arkansas, literally nobody cares, and then Vanderbilt at Kentucky. Come on, Kentucky, you can't be what you want to be this year and then blow this. I mean, I know that it could be Admiral Akbar, but surely, Kentucky, if you want this year to be what we all kind of secretly are wanting to see, you got to beat Vanderbilt, don't they?
Let's try. Got to, especially at home.
You got to. In Cam Newton Stadium, come on. Come on, Kentucky. Come on now.
I mean, you can't they get Georgia there in a couple of weeks, and Georgia starts to play at Kentucky and play Florida and Jacksonville. That's two games that look way tougher than everybody thought.
How Kentucky would it be for them to lose to Vanderbilt at home and then beat Georgia? That would be so Kentucky.
I think the Kentucky thing to do would be for them to win, actually beat Georgia, win the East this year, and then get to face this Alabama team.
Well, Dad, let's not get the car ahead of the horse, and I'm making a Kentucky reference and saying horse, so that's trite, but yeah. All right. Well, we've worked our way through therapy, and our time is up with the therapist now. So, do you have any closing thoughts? And by the way, I want to thank all of our questioners, our listeners, and Twitter people who wrote in all those great questions, because we wanted this to be a listener show, this episode, and you guys certainly responded. So, appreciate it.
Here's my closing thought. These are two things that can both be true, okay? Mm-hmm. Gus Malzahn has the coaching ability to lead a team to beat Nick Saban and win the SEC. And Gus Malzahn is directly responsible for Auburn's year-over-year inconsistency since he was hired.
I totally agree.
I believe that both of those things can and probably are true.
Yep. Yep, I totally agree. And I guess I'm just getting tired of the wild mood swings. Though he's not the only Auburn coach to do that. I admit that. In fact, they all have. It wouldn't be an Auburn coach that didn't have us go 5-7 one year and 13-0 the next or something. That's what we do. That's our brand. Wild mood swings are our brand. sometimes within 2 weeks of each other.
But amen to that.
Yeah, but gosh, I sure would like a little... I just want 1 year to be wrong, that we can't have nice things when we're supposed to, only when we're not supposed to. It's like if we see the Christmas presents coming in the door, it's all a box of coal. But if we don't see them coming in, we walk out on Christmas morning and there's all these presents. So I don't know. That's a weird metaphor. All right. I think we'll wrap it up there. I still got to edit the show and get it posted tonight. So... our time is up. We thank you very much for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
So what becomes of you?
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Go to bed.